winner of a New York State Emmy for Best Political Program. This is New York Now.
Hi, and welcome to New York Now. I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union. The last full working week of 2018 began with Governor Andrew Cuomo setting the stage for 2019 with a speech laying out an ambitious agenda that will make full use of the new Democrat-led legislature. While the issues were very much of the moment, from immigration to legalized pot, the animating force behind the governor's thinking was a New York politician who left Albany for the White House almost 90 years ago, Franklin Roosevelt. Let's see a clip.
FDR was called upon to govern in the midst of a great economic crisis that threatened the well-being of the nation. Well, today, my friends, we are called to govern at a time of great social crisis that also threatens the well-being of the nation. And today we see our greatest nightmare. We see our greatest threat, which is Americans in conflict with other Americans. We see this nation's greatest strength, its diversity, being perverted and distorted into its greatest weakness. The rise in white supremacist groups and the Ku Klux Klan, and the rise in anti-Semitism and misogyny, this strikes at the core of who we are as a nation. Americans know instinctively that hate begets hate, and that Martin Luther King was right when he said we either live together as brothers and sisters or we perish as fools. Like FDR, we have to take the opportunity to take this crisis, harness the energy, and make it a positive force and not a negative one. And use this energy, use this moment, use this time to pass an agenda that can advance us all for years to come.
All right, and now for the last Reporters Roundtable of 2018, I'm happy to be joined by Joe Spector from the USA Today Network, Karen DeWitt from New York State Public Radio, and of course, my partner here at New York Now, Matt Ryan. All right, so let's talk about the State of the State preview. I have the laundry list of agenda items that the governor laid out. Deep breath, legalizing recreational marijuana. We could spend a whole show talking about that one. Ending cash bail, a Green New Deal, but of course, the definition of what that means can change depending on which advocate you're talking to. Gun control, electoral reform, passage of the Agenda Act, the DREAM Act, and the Child Victims Act, and oh so much more.
It's very ambitious, very progressive, and he says it's all going to happen in the first 100 days. So by the end of March, presumably, this is all going to happen. I think the governor wants to act fast because he's got a new crew of Senate Democrats in and feels like maybe they're a little bit inexperienced. And if he does things fast, he can maybe get his way a little more with this stuff. It really seems like he's trying to get ahead on these issues before the legislature runs away with him, which I think has happened to some governors in the past.
Yeah, I mean, this is not, none of the items on there were particularly new. I mean, he was probably most forceful than he has been when it comes to recreational marijuana, saying we're going to do it. I mean, he's kind of alluded to that. We had a study that recommended it. But yeah, I mean, what he did lay out, though, was that this is his agenda. And he's going to be the one kind of driving the bus here. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a new state legislature, Democratic control, but these are the items that he's going to lead them towards doing.
He's driving the bus. That's a good way to put it, because all of the talk really has been about these new young Democrats who knocked off these stalwarts, you know, from the state Senate, and they're going to come in and they're going to push for their agenda that got them elected. And he's like, whoa, I'm still the guy in charge here. Talking about marijuana, I think it's funny. Back in February of 2017, there was a gaggle at what is now the new Schenectady train station. And our friend and colleague from the Wall Street Journal, Jimmy Vielkind, had a funny little comment to the governor. He said, you know, governor, why are you such a stick in the mud about marijuana? And, you know, and after the governor gave him a little friendly shot, he said, it's a gateway drug and marijuana leads to other drugs. And there's a lot of proof that that's true. I, as of this date, am unconvinced on recreational marijuana.
That's just a year ago.
Yeah, you know? February 2017.
Almost 2 years ago. But that is a big change from, you know, a gateway drug to now something that it's okay for people to use. It shows that his thinking has evolved, or the politics has just changed so much and on this issue.
Is that largely because of the way that so many states far away from us, you know, including California, you know, Nevada, you name it, as well as states much closer to us, including Vermont, and most recently Massachusetts, are moving
Jersey.
Towards, and New Jersey are
so, we're surrounded.
Know, Canada has it, you know. So yeah, I mean, it does become. At what point does New York say we have to legalize it just because other states are?
That's right.
You get into the legal questions. If someone goes to one state, comes back into New York, and you know, how do you enforce that?
Yeah.
And then are we going to, you know, it always goes back to, are we going to lose the revenue to other states? It was the same argument with casinos, right? Well, we have to build casinos.
That's a good point.
We don't want people going to Jersey. So you kind of saw this happening. But yeah, Cuomo, I remember he didn't even support medical marijuana.
That's right.
And
the medical marijuana law is kind of flawed and very limited as to, you know, what conditions
not
you can have
forms,
to get it. So, yeah, so it would be a really big change for New York, but as you said, not that big a change for the Northeast, because
the governor,
it's going to be legal everywhere.
You're right, and the governor has always talked about New York being a leader, the progressive beacon here in the United States, and right now New York's getting surpassed on this by a lot of states, so he doesn't want to fall too far behind, I would imagine.
We heard, in addition to the clip we saw at the top, the invocation of Franklin Roosevelt was used explicitly because the governor made it clear and said it in subsequent interviews with Alan Chartok and others that he believes that New York State is under assault by a hostile federal government, meaning the Trump administration, on things like taxes, on immigration, and other issues.
That's right. The anti-Trump rhetoric really worked for him in his reelection campaign, and he's going to continue that and make New York the resistance to Trump, which leads to the question, is he going to run for president in 2020? You know, he's citing FDR. He's going to give his inaugural address on Ellis Island, you know, is that raising his national profile even more? And will he, you know, will he run? He says, no, I just want to be governor for now. But most people say that until they're running. We saw that with Kirsten Gillibrand, our U.S. Senator. She ran for re-election saying, oh, no, I'm going to serve out my 6-year term. And then as soon as she was re-elected, was saying, well, you know, now I'm thinking about it.
We were just talking about that first 100 days, and I'm a little cynical in that way, too, is that if Cuomo comes out and passes all these progressive items, you know, does that change the narrative a little bit? Listen, I was handcuffed, you know, during those 7-8 years when the Republicans were in charge of the Senate. Now, this is what I can do as a progressive Democrat.
Yeah, watch me run. Moving on to the legislature, there was continued friction between legislative leaders and the governor and the members of the commission that only recently handed lawmakers and top state officials significant raises. Carl Hastie, the assembly speaker, and John Flanagan, the outgoing Senate Majority Leader, basically said that the governor was not being candid when he asserted that the pay commission it was always empowered to make decisions, to make recommendations, which now have the force of law, constraining outside income, which is apparently what's going to happen.
Yeah, well, they don't like the strings attached to the pay raises, which is limiting outside income and getting rid of most of the stipends that members get for committee chairs and leadership posts. So they're pretty angry about that. They also wonder why the commissioner didn't put any restrictions on the governor or the executive branch. Why aren't there any outside income limits on anything that they earn or book deals? We saw our governor get a really lucrative book deal. So they think something's up and they're angry about it. But the question is, what do they do about it right now? They would have to forego the pay raises if they don't go with all these strings attached.
Yeah, I mean, now it's in the courts too.
Right.
I mean, there's a lawsuit that's filed. Question the legitimacy of not the pay raise commission, but the pay raise commission tying the pay raise to outside income, to the Lulus, as Karen noted. But you know, you got to remember this reform would address some of the biggest scandals in Albany for a long time. Lawmakers' outside income, the fact that chairmanships are decided by the legislative leaders. And therefore, the criticism has been that they can control who gets these stipends for leadership posts, and therefore controlling the...
encourages bossism.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, a lot of good government groups support what they did, but the question is, could they legally do that in exchange for the pay raises?
Well, a lot of it's about power. They don't want to give up that power. As Assembly Speaker, you have a lot of power over your members if you can reward and punish them with these stipends.
I think that's pretty fascinating for the people who watch our show, maybe who don't watch it every week, who are thinking to themselves, why wouldn't these legislators who haven't had a pay raise in 20 years be against this? Mm-hmm. And then you almost got to think, well, they're against it because of these, you know, it's tied to this outside income limit. It doesn't look really good, I think, to a lot of the people out there in New York.
Yeah, plus they're going to get a $50,000 pay raise over 3 years.
And how many Lulus, you know, add up to $50,000?
Yeah, it's a sweet deal. You know, a lot of people would take that with some restrictions.
All of you out there who have received 63% raises over the course of this year or recent years, you know, might not sympathize. But let's move on to the issue of how do you solve a problem like Senator Kevin Parker, who in the Senate was caught up in some social media agita, I believe the term is. He was assailed on Twitter, as many elected officials are, by a Senate GOP spokeswoman, Candace Giove, who we're all familiar with, who called him out for a little, what appears to be a little bit of parking placard misuse. Parker's response, two words, kill yourself, which many people, believe it or not, said was insensitive to, first of all, something you just shouldn't say to anybody, and also was insensitive to the issue of suicide. Yeah. Kevin Parker is a guy with a history.
Yeah, even on Twitter, that definitely crossed a line, I think.
Even on Twitter.
Yes, yeah. which gets, you know, and Candace Giove can really tweak people on Twitter as well. She's known for her snark. I'm a fan of it, I have to say.
And she used to be with the IDC. Yeah. She's with the Senate GOP now, but she was with the hated IDC by some members of the Democrats.
That's a good point. There's a history there. She was with the Independent Democratic Conference, who kept the Senate Democrats out of power, so there's a lot of anger there. But obviously, Senator Parker went too far. He has a history of having trouble with anger management. And, you know, I'm going to be charitable here. It's the season. He needs some help. Obviously, some things in his life are not going.
He actually
right?
says he's going to go get it.
Yes.
And, you know, he says he's going to try to look at it. But, you know, it's interesting, too, the reaction from his colleagues in the Senate Democratic Conference. You know, they're about to take the majority. Last time they held it was 2009, 2010.
Nothing but good news lately.
Infighting. And so here they say they're a new conference. A lot of those members are gone. Kevin Parker was actually one who does go back to that time.
Yep.
But, you know, so, but you did see Andrew Stewart Cousins, other members come out quickly and denounce Kevin Parker, who did apologize.
Yeah, but I mean, they kind of just issued a couple of statements. They didn't do all that much to chastise.
I guess
that is the worry. Is it going to go back to the chaos of 10 years ago when the Democrats controlled the Senate, and it was just one crazy thing happening after another.
City and state, Karen was talking about the history, gave a kind of good rundown of just what he's had in his past. He was arrested in 05 for punching a traffic agent, was giving him a ticket for double parking. A legislative staffer in 05 accused Parker of threatening her in an Albany restaurant after she accused him of shoving. Convicted of misdemeanor criminal mischief after he reportedly damaged the camera of a New York Post photographer. So there's a long history here, and I'm sure that's got to worry Andrea Stewart Cousins a little bit.
You're leaving out the widely reported story of him throwing a rather misogynistic term at Diane Savino in a conference.
We only got so much time.
I know, that's true, exactly. With that in mind, let's move on to a slightly more significant story for the state in the years to come, and that is new census data that shows New York leading the nation in out-migration, losing more than 48,000 residents July to July most recently, and that likely, if the trend continues, will result after the new full census in New York losing one or perhaps even two members of its congressional delegation.
It's a problem for New York. I mean, you keep seeing, I think this might be the third year in a row that New York has had a population decline, and it's this out-migration of New Yorkers to other states that's only really being filled by, you know, immigrants and new births, but they're not keeping up with the number of people who are leaving New York, particularly upstate, right? And so at a time when the governor has focused on the upstate economy, there continues to be this out-migration of people. And as you noted, Casey, it's not just people leaving, it's New York's political clout in Washington. I mean, you know, We had something like 40-something members in Congress, a few decades ago.
In 1953, yeah. 45 members of Congress. That's amazing.
So New York was the most populated state. That's why it was called the Empire State.
We might be down to 25 in the next, and that's a significant impact. And then you end up having these elections of districts, people running against each other.
Right.
So it could really make for a big problem for New York.
Well, so many politicians have promised that they're going to fix this.
Including Andrew Cuomo.
Andrew Cuomo and all his economic development. He went all around the state saying, Buffalo's looking up, Rochester's looking up, Syracuse is great. But I guess the question is, can the politicians fix this? Is it bigger than that? Is it the taxes? Is it the weather? I think Cuomo suggested recently, it's the weather, that's why they want to leave.
Maine and Massachusetts are doing okay.
Is it the end of the industrial era that ended, several decades ago and companies moving out? Can politicians really have any power over fixing this?
We've got about 5 minutes left. This is our last roundtable of the year. So I wanted to kind of go down the line and ask, what are the big political stories of 2018? When you look back on this year, what are the master narratives going to be, Joe?
Yeah, it was a big political year in New York. Every 4 years, this is the biggest political year of the four-year cycle. You had Governor Andrew Cuomo's reelection. He had a challenge Cynthia Nixon, won, fairly easily there, won reelection against Mark Molinaro in November. But probably the biggest, and we've talked a lot about it here, is Democrats taking control of the state Senate and what that's going to mean. This is a decade in the making for them. Unlike the last time they held it, which was a narrow majority, they now have close to 40 members. So, they're going to be in a position where they could even spare a few people from certain controversial votes and still have enough to pass something like the DREAM Act, which might be difficult for some suburban members to support. They still would have enough probably to pass these things. So the fact that they're going to come in with a Democratic-controlled majority for the first time under Cuomo, and as Matt noted, sort of the backdrop of Cuomo and a national scope, that's really going to be something that's going to be pretty extraordinary to watch.
Yeah, it's called protecting the marginals. Can they keep like the New Democrats from Long Island by not going too far into these liberal policies, maybe still keeping the cap on the property taxes to please the constituents there? And the Assembly's always been really good about protecting the so-called marginal lawmakers. The Senate Democrats haven't always done that, so that's something. And, I wonder, is this a permanent shift? The Republicans have been in power in the Senate for most of the last century, and it just seems like, can they win this back? The Democrats have 40 seats to 23 to the Republicans.
It'd be a big loss for them.
No longer are we talking about that razor-thin margin.
Yes, for so long there was that razor-thin margin. Are we just seeing this really big shift for decades to come?
Karen, what's your big story
of
the year?
I would have to say it's probably the corruption trials, mostly because they seem like they're getting overlooked. You have Governor Cuomo's former closest top aide, Joe Prococo, convicted of bribery. The engineer of his economic development plans, Dr. Elaine Calieros, convicted of bid rigging. We saw the two former leaders of the legislature, Silver and Skelos, retried, reconvicted. And they're all going to prison. And what's pretty amazing is Governor Cuomo wasn't implicated in that, though some things seem kind of questionable. And he's kind of escaped unscathed. And it seems like these are just going to be put behind us as though in a way they never happened, which I think is kind of stunning, considering how much time I spent covering them this year.
Yeah, it didn't affect him in the elections. Mm-hmm. There was no ethics reform that came down. Maybe there'll be another push for it in 2019. Cuomo did put that on his agenda of items.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But we'll see how aggressively they pursue that.
Matt, what's your big story of 2018?
I'll go a little parochial here. We live in the capital region, and we actually live in an area where we see TV commercials from three different congressional districts. CD20, where Paul Tonko is, he always cruises to re-election. Elise Stefanik in the North Country, her district comes down into Fulton and Saratoga County. So we see their commercials as well. Also, New York 19. New York 19 was represented by John Faso. He has a few days left before his term is done. But there was just an overload of commercials in this television market. A lot of them negative, and a lot of them The New York Times said it in July, racist ads coming from the NRCC ripping Antonio Delgado, the African-American Rhodes Scholar, went to Harvard. But all we heard about is his rap career from a decade ago, and it turned a lot of people off. People that I talked to who either don't follow politics or hate politics, you know, we're using that word racist. It's a terrible look. Why are they running these ads? And that's all we saw for months and months from the end of July until November, you know, 7th.
Negative ads usually work, too. But in this case, yeah, they definitely didn't. They turned the tide. I think also the factor of, you know, President Trump and so many New Yorkers not liking President Trump and coming
for
out
sure.
to vote. But, yeah, there was a deluge of those ads, and they were some of them were pretty shocking. Mm-hmm.
All fascinating stories, but for my own two cents, I'm going to agree with Karen. I think that the federal trials did what so many other corruption trials, and there have been a lot of them, have done in the state, which is kind of serve as an X-ray as to how the capital, I almost said Albany, but I hate it when people refer to my hometown as, you know, as the center of corruption, as the state capital and New York's political culture works. And I think we saw that. It got to the question of how development deals come together and campaign finance and the way that the executive chamber works in many ways. So fascinating stuff. All right. Well, that's where we're going to have to end it. So thanks very much to Joe Spector from the USA Today Network, Karen DeWitt from New York State Public Radio, and of course, Matt Ryan.
All right, this week's New York Now poll question is asking you about something the governor wants to make happen next year. Would you like to see Election Day become a state holiday? Let us know at nynow.org. Should a legislative pay raise for lawmakers be tied to a limit on outside income? That was last week's question, and 83% of you said yes. Fabian in the Bronx, watching on WNET, said, if being a legislator is such a sacrifice, then don't be one. New York should not be number one in pay if California has a larger economy. Compensation should be under $100,000 with term limits.
Dave in the Albany suburb of Loudonville asks, just exactly what appropriate function is thought to be served by limiting a legislator's outside income? Why is the legislature so disproportionately opposed to earned wealth as opposed to inherited wealth? And lastly, Daniel in Orange County voted, yes, limit outside income. The legislature wants to have their raise and eat it too. That's greedy. Our thanks to all those who participated. To do so this week, just head to nynow.org. It's where you'll find all of our past programs, plus links to us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, where our handle is at nynow_PBS. You'll also find a link to my paper's Capital Confidential blog, also available at timesunion.com.
All right, we want to tell you about a special program we have coming up on the weekend of January 4th. It's a documentary that looks back at Governor Cuomo's first two terms in office. Here's a preview.
He wanted to restore that sense of normalcy to the Capitol, and it boils down to the fact that chaos is not Cuomonian. It's the first law of Andrew Cuomo that he wants control, he doesn't want uncertainty, and he was able to, in the early days of his first term and during his first gubernatorial campaign, make the case that this sense of functionality and forward motion was what he would bring to the table, and voters craved it.
He knows how to be a statesman. He knows how to publicly commend legislators and give them credit for things. And he's also got a reputation as someone who's a bit of a bully himself and can sort of strike fear in the legislature. And I think what we saw, especially after the Elliott Spitzer and then David Paterson administrations, is that you really do need a combination of both of those things. You need to have someone who knows how to work with the legislature, but also knows how to push them around a little bit.
You really don't want to do it? Good. Well, then I'll send you a bill. It'll be an extended bill. You don't want to do it? Don't pass it. Shut down the government, and then let's take the case to the people. And I am confident in taking the case to the people.
Hello, I'm Governor Cuomo, and I wanted you to know that we passed the New York State budget, and we passed it on time.
Symbolically, to come in his first year and get that budget done on time after in 2010, it wasn't completed until August, almost one of the latest budgets in state history. That came after 20 years of late state budgets. For Cuomo to come in, get the budget on time, really show New Yorkers that New York was on the right track.
If you look at the word dysfunction and you eliminate the first three words, D-Y-S, you have function. And New York State government is now functioning well in a bipartisan basis. So, Governor, I congratulate you on your first budget.
We have a problem, and I am proud of the governor, Governor Cuomo, for standing up and addressing this. We are solving a $10 billion deficit with no new taxes. That is a remarkable accomplishment.
There's talk of you running for president in 2016. Would you, and is there any comment on that?
Andrew Cuomo is a fiscal centrist, and he purposefully gave Republicans fiscal issues, platforms, and stances that they could support. You know, that really changed in 2013 with the SAFE Act.
We will not comply! We will not comply!
It's a special edition of New York Now, Governor Andrew Cuomo, the first two terms. It airs right here on your local PBS station the weekend of January 4th during our normal New York Now broadcast time. And we hope you tune in.
We say goodbye today with scenes from the Queen City of Buffalo, my native city. I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union.
And I'm Matt Ryan. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time right here on your local PBS station.